The Netball Show with Flyhawk, raising the bar for netball and women's sport. I'm Sasha Shipway and this is The Netball Show with Flyhawk. On this podcast, we are delighted to be able to share the latest Pride House Birmingham podcast featuring none other than England defender Stacey Francis-Bayman. Stacey has been speaking as part of a special series of podcasts created by the team at Pride House, with conversations about sport and LGBTQ plus rights in the Commonwealth.
Thank you for dropping into the Pride House podcast. This series of episodes is bringing you conversations related to sport and being LGBTQ plus in the Commonwealth. It's all in support of Pride House Birmingham, the venue dedicated to equality, diversity and inclusion that will open its doors in late July, ready for the start of the Birmingham 2022 Commonwealth Games. My name is John Holmes, and I'm a sports journalist working as part of the Pride House team. On this, our third episode, the focus is very much on Birmingham itself, as we're joined by two proud Brummies. One is England international netball star Stacey Francis-Bayman, whose personal collection of accolades includes a Commonwealth Games medal. And the other is activist and campaigner Kakan Qureshi, who's empowering civil rights work on behalf of LGBTQ plus people in the South Asian community has been recognised by the Crown. Stacey is also a Pride House ambassador, and Kakan is on our Pride House advisory board. And you're really going to warm to them both from listening to this chat. It covers their relationships with sport while growing up, finding their authentic selves while living in such a diverse city and region, challenging moments that they faced related to being LGBTQ+, Kakan's belief in the importance of inclusive education, and Stacey's passion for netball and athlete activism, and their Pride House hopes. Please help us to grow our audience by subscribing, rating, reviewing, and sharing. Find us on social media by just searching Pride House Birmingham, and if you head over to our website, you can sign up for updates and contact us directly. And now, here's your Pride House podcast episode. Enjoy. Welcome, everybody, and welcome to my two guests on this edition of the Pride House podcast. We're delighted to be joined from Perth, Western Australia, by Stacey Francis-Bayman. Hi, Stacey.
Hello.
It's fantastic you're able to join us. Pride House ambassador, as we say, zooming in from down under, and where you're enjoying a great Super Netball season so far with West Coast Fever. Your career so far, like five Super League titles back here in the UK, a couple of World Cup bronze medals, Commonwealth bronze as well from Delhi 2010. And we've just had the news this week that you've just been confirmed that you're in the England squad selection for this next international cycle as well. So these forthcoming Commonwealth Games represent a big ambition for you, is that right?
Yes, absolutely. The juiciest carrot dangling on the horizon. Incredibly proud for me, and I missed the last Commonwealth Games where England won their historic gold medal. So yeah, lots and lots of motivation for the next few months.
Superb. And Kakan, you're in Birmingham today. Welcome along. Member of our advisory board for Pride House Birmingham, and recently spoke at our test event for Pride House, which was the Sporting Pride Conference. We're delighted to have you there. Founder of Birmingham South Asians LGBT group Finding a Voice, and you were awarded a British Empire Medal in the New Year's Honours List 2021 for services to LGBT equality. Tell us a bit about the moment when you learned of that award, how it made you feel.
To be honest, initially I thought it was somebody playing a joke on me, because it's not very often that you do receive an email from the royal household. So initially I was like, oh, what's going on here? Then it suddenly dawned on me that this is a reality and this is genuine email. So I had to Google it, to be honest, to make sure it wasn't a scam. But once I did find out the truth of the matter, to be honest, I was really elated by it all. You know, because it is a very proud achievement, and to know that only so many people receive one, you know, that really kind of made me feel really special and quite unique in that respect. And not very often that many South Asian LGBT people step forward and are receiving awards like that.
Well, I mean, congratulations again on that, because it is, as you say, a fantastic achievement and real reflection of all your hard work campaigning over the years. So just to start off the conversation, really, Stacey, I was reading again your statement when you were announced as a Pride House ambassador, and you spoke in that about how advocacy has become this kind of personal passion of yours as an athlete as well. So how has that kind of developed over time, and why has it become so important to you?
What I have realised and I'm really keen on is that I have a platform, and it's not massive, but it certainly is impactful. And I have a following of lots of, you know, young and varied people. And I'm mindful that I want to be able to use the voice and the platform and the opportunities that I have to make meaningful impact. And that doesn't necessarily just come from throwing a ball around on the netball court, although that's fantastic. I am a person aside from just being an athlete, and I'm really proud of the person that I am, and that makes me kind of want to share my journey as well. And I think it was probably a bit of a slower journey for me, because I have had fantastic experiences throughout my whole life being a member of the LGBTQ plus community, and I think the only thing that I had really experienced in terms of people being advocates was around them sharing their journeys of difficulty, and everybody's experience is unique. But I think it took me a little while to realise that my experience and my story is just as valuable, with, you know, far fewer hurdles and challenges, and just to take complete ownership of that and celebrate my diversity and the differences that I have, and yeah, use this really small window of being an elite athlete to have as much positive impact as possible.
Well, I think that's really, really admirable. And it's something that hopefully other athletes will be inspired by, in, not just for this Commonwealth Games, but going forward as well. And Kakana, like, as one of our advisory board members, when you have an athlete like Stacey who wants to use their platform to talk about LGBTQ plus education, which is something that you've devoted, you know, all your life, or so much of your life to campaigning for, what does that mean to you?
I think it's just really wonderful that we have Stacey, who is a woman of colour, who is proudly talking about her identity as well, in the respect that, you know, there aren't that many role models out there, especially in Birmingham. It's fantastic that we've got somebody who can use their platform to educate people. And that's what I keep saying within the minority groups in particular, you know, coming from a South Asian background, that we do need people to step forward, talk more about what it means to be part of the LGBTQ plus community. And also it's about sort of having the sharing that narrative and knowing that we are validated, and, you know, we don't need to justify who we are, we just are. And having someone like Stacey, I think it's really good for Birmingham, the Commonwealth, and the Games as well, to show visibility and authenticity, and to say that we're just ordinary people at the end of the day. You know, being LGBTQ is just one part of our identity, but we have to look at the whole aspect of our being. And, you know, having people of colour come through to talk about it is admirable in itself, in that, you know, as I said, when I was growing up, I didn't have a role model. And it's nice to know that the next generation coming through do have somebody, you know, that they can turn to and look up to, you know. And with social media as well, in particular, you know, Stacey's already admitted that she's got so many followers. And that's a good thing as well, you know, because having followers, you can kind of spread the understanding and share that information so people don't feel alone anymore.
And you've spoken on various platforms about your story growing up, and how you were kind of encouraged by some of your family members to kind of understand more about who you were in terms of, you know, the culture that you were brought up in. I understand that sport probably didn't play a big part in your upbringing, but did you have a relationship with sport? Was it a place that was difficult for you, or that you ever had any sort of connection to?
Well, for me, it was very difficult, because I knew from a very young age that I was different, and I didn't know how to express it, because obviously I was a bit too shy in some respects, but I was drawn more to the feminine aspects of the world. I wanted to play with dolls, dollhouses, you know, play dress up. So the more kind of masculine aspects of sports was quite frightening and intimidating, to be honest. I kind of tried to veer away from it, because even when the way I was walking or running, people would say, you know, they'll call out names like, you're a sissy boy or a Nancy boy, or words to that effect. So obviously that had some impact on the way I was feeling about myself and the world around me. You know, but when I was in my teens, there was an opportunity to become an athlete, you know, the long jump, or the, you know, the sprinting, the 100 meters or 200 meters. And I did quite well in that. And my tutors did encourage me to take it up full time. But as I said, for me, trying to come to terms with my sexual orientation, it didn't quite fit in quite well with how I wanted my life to be, because I knew that if I put myself in the public arena, because I was mocked and teased anyway, I think placing myself in the public arena in that respect would have been quite detrimental to me because I was quite shy and lacked confidence. But I'm so glad that people within the sports world are coming forward now and speaking up and championing LGBTQ rights. And I think in the sports world in particular, we do really need these role models to come out even more. Not so much come out. Why I advocate now is people to be more authentic and for other people to acknowledge that, you know, sexual orientation and gender identity is only one aspect of who we are. You know, and as long as people are content in doing what they're doing and navigating it, then that's even better. I just wish that sometimes, you know, in the sports world, we would accommodate the LGBT community a lot more than where we are now. And I'm hoping that in a couple of years down the line, you know, rather than have like 200 people coming forward, we've got 500, 600, 700, 800 people saying that we're part of the LGBT community, because we know it gives a worldwide message, doesn't it? And hopefully that will lead to more acceptance.
Absolutely. How does that, hearing Kakan talk about his kind of his upbringing in Birmingham, how does that kind of resonate with you, Stacey? Because tell us a little bit about, you know, you're finding your own place in sport and growing up in Bromsgrove, which is just outside Birmingham for people that don't know the area too well.
I think, yeah, as having grown up in and around Birmingham, I found it to be an incredibly diverse place. Having said that, I was a minority at my school. Bromsgrove has probably changed a little bit now, but it was certainly a very upper class area with lots of white people. But what was beautiful, and I think specifically in relation to my family, is that I never felt other. My mum, and I never realised it at the time, but my mum specifically has always advocated for me to lean into the things that made me different from everybody else. And I've always been incredibly proud to be mixed race. I love the completely different sides of my family and the cultural diversity that I have between the two, and being able to dip into both sides equally. I identify as being bisexual. And I think just having, you know, that complete range of diversity across all areas of my life is something that I've always celebrated. What really resonated with me was when Kakan said about people not having to come out. That isn't a phrase or something that I've ever really felt like I've had to lean into. I've always been me and never felt like I had to make a specifically special statement about that, but have been confident and clear about the person that I am. And now through sport, and I guess the platform and the opportunities that I've been, you know, privileged to be a part of, I'm able to lean into that even more, and just to share that authenticity that was mentioned earlier with a wider audience. And I think, well, I know that netball and sports for me has been an incredibly safe, accommodating and celebrating space.
And we've got this slogan for Pride House, which is celebrate, participate, educate. And we really want to reach young people in particular with that message and kind of leave this legacy in the region of like a healthy, active, young population, because Birmingham is like one of the youngest cities in Europe. It's got this, you know, really strong demographic that's geared towards youth. So how do we do that in a way through Pride House, do you think, in a way that doesn't maybe make people feel pressured? We just sort of spoken there about, we don't want it to be about people feeling they have to come out. We just want people to be able to find their own place in the community.
I think one thing that has been mentioned previously is role models. I think everybody that I looked up to when I was younger, I had some sort of similarity with, or felt like I identified with a part of their personality or who they were, whether it was the fact that they looked like me, their skin colour was the same as mine, they were interested in the same things that I was interested in. They were the, you know, actors, athletes, people that I gravitated towards and wanted to be like. And so I think, you know, that more diverse range of role models that you have out there for people to identify with, to learn from, to hear about, to, you know, to feel accepted, and everybody wants to be, you know, part of a group and see parts of themselves in people who are, you know, living an alternate life. I think that's a really great space to lean into, and is definitely what drew me to wanting to be a Pride House ambassador.
Brilliant. And Kakan, one of the things that Stacey mentioned there was actors, you know, this kind of element of culture, I think, which Birmingham is also really famous for. And I know that was a kind of an area of interest that you went into when you were growing up, when you were learning more about who you are. What do you think the role that Birmingham has played itself in your journey with the Commonwealth Games coming to the area as well? How did this kind of this town, this city that's famous for its diversity, did you feel a kind of a pressure there? Because maybe it was a place where, you know, there was so much diversity all around you, you almost felt kind of, you know, affected you in a different way.
It most definitely did. I think what we need to look at is, for me, it was, you know, when I was growing up, I'm a child of the 70s and I came through like the 80s, and my coming out experience was, you know, at the time of Section 28, HIV and AIDS. So, you know, there was those aspects of life which were very much taboo and very much stigmatized as well. And then the other side to that is, because my background is, I come from a Muslim background, and we're kind of educated in our own ways by people, either my family or people around me, to say that being homosexual in particular is haram or forbidden. So that obviously has an impact on the way I'm feeling and trying to navigate myself. But when I look at Birmingham and how it sort of kind of accepted or didn't accept at the time the LGBT community, it was kind of like, you know, I think I experienced a lot of internalized homophobia at the time as well, because I kind of identified in some way, but I couldn't really relate to what was going on around me. And I think that was down to guilt and shame. I think having the breakthrough of the gay village was something in itself, you know, and it embraced very much the LGBT community. But again, it was very much dominated by cisgendered white males. So I felt somewhat left out. And it's only taken, I think, maybe in the last 10 years that Birmingham is beginning to realise that LGBTQ individuals come from all walks of life and all different communities and different faiths. And as a city, I think we need to promote that a lot more than what we have done. Always, you know, we've had, for example, Birmingham Pride Parade, and it's only in the last couple of years that I was one of the Muslim people who led the parade after 22 years. So I think on the one side, we celebrate diversity, which is fantastic, but really we need to pull out individuals who are willing to step forward, who do have voices, who are authentic, and who can be the role models for the next generation. So, you know, Birmingham it can make strides in some respects, but in other respects, certain aspects are still, I think, a little bit closeted or a little bit taboo. And I'm not saying that I'm here to represent all South Asian LGBT, but I know that I'm not the only one on my own, and I'm not the only gay in the village. There's plenty of others who have got more kind of life experiences, I suppose, or confidence to be who they want to be, but they're just not willing to be in the public forum. But I'm hoping that with the Commonwealth Games and Birmingham can reconnect with people of colour in particular, and learn to educate and celebrate who we are.
I think that's a really interesting kind of viewpoint of it. And one of the things that I know has just happened in Birmingham in the last week or so, at the time that we're recording this, is this first kind of celebratory music festival for Black LGBTQ plus communities, and that's kind of a step forward in terms of like that representation. Stacey, to kind of learn about events like that happening in your home city, does that give you kind of a lot of hope for the future, that young people, you know, like yourself, who may really relate to your story, you know, are able to work out and find their place in the community much quicker perhaps than you were able to at a younger age?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's incredibly encouraging. I feel like my experience and my journey as an adult living away from England majority for the most part, and also having been out of Birmingham for a while, has been really different. And those aren't necessarily things that I have heard about where I've placed myself in the world. So, yeah, it makes you feel incredibly proud to know that Birmingham is continuing to lead and be innovative in that area. And as Kakan said, I think it doesn't mean that it's, you know, everything is already done and that it's the most progressive place to be, but to be known as an incredibly culturally diverse and accommodating city, I think gives you a fantastic platform to lean even further into that. So just because you're known for something and you're good at it, it doesn't mean that you can kind of rest on those laurels and that reputation. There's even more work to be done, and a fantastic platform to build on.
So you mentioned there about like the fact that you've obviously lived away from Birmingham, from the West Midlands for a large proportion of your life playing netball in Australia. And in one of the interviews you've given in the past, you spoke about that time when you were in Australia and the national survey on legalizing same-sex marriage was taking place. This was back in 2017. And when we look, I suppose, at the history of LGBTQ rights in the Commonwealth, that's quite a, you know, pivotal moment in its own way. You know, it's this kind of canvassing of the whole population of a country as to whether or not equal marriage was the way forwards. Tell us a little bit about how your interpretation of that was as somebody who was coming to the country from somewhere else.
For anyone that knows me, I'm not really very backwards in coming forwards. However, I certainly found that to be a really uncomfortable time. I think I shied away from having conversations with people and talking about it, because I think I learned that people weren't necessarily, or they didn't necessarily share my viewpoint, which is obviously that everybody should have the right to be married if they wish. And I think there were a few awkward conversations and moments where I realised that I wasn't completely surrounded by people that aligned with my, you know, my viewpoint. I had a lot of people, very well-meaning, say, "How fantastic, like, you must be so pleased that, you know, now that you can get married." And my response was, "Well, I could get married in my country. I couldn't get married here." And even just the percentage of the vote, although for how many people turned out, et cetera, it was perceived to be relatively high. I think to hear that 40% of a country didn't feel like you deserved the right to have the same right as everybody else made me feel really uncomfortable. And so I think wrongly, I stepped away from having a voice and encouraging debate and conversation during that period of time, because I just didn't agree with a lot of what was going on and a lot was what was being said. And although it was incredibly important that the vote happened, there's kind of almost that level of disbelief that people could have an opinion and to say no. So yeah, I found it really interesting. I learned an awful lot, but I think, you know, we learn a lot about ourselves and the people around us when we're in periods of discomfort.
And Kakam, when you listen to Stacey talk about that feeling of, you know, wanting to step away from this, what was quite a divisive conversation, I suppose, that was happening in Australia at that time, does that give you some concerns about how we move forward in other Commonwealth countries with LGBTQ plus rights? I mean, I think about the changes that have happened in India in the last few years or so, where there has been, you know, a step forward, but not to the degree where they're having a national survey on whether or not equal marriage should be introduced.
Yeah, I think what it is that it does come back to educating people. And even though in India, for example, there was Section 377, and we know that, you know, the demographics in Birmingham is there's a high percentage of South Asians as well in the community here. But it's unfortunate that in Pakistan, for example, I receive a number of emails and messages and correspondence through social media from Muslims or other South Asians saying that, you know, India's got Section 377, but they don't have anything. And they're very much hidden individuals. And there are closeted or closed support groups online. But, you know, when we talk about the Commonwealth and LGBT, we've got representation within the games. But how far it ripples out is a different matter in terms of the South Asian diaspora, for example. You know, do we, when people are applauding an individual, do you applaud the individual because they're a master of the game? Or do you applaud them because they've come out as being LGBT? And also, do you look at them, you know, do you denigrate them because they're LGBT, even though they might be in the number one spot? Or, you know, so it's about how you navigate that particular conversation as well. I'm hoping that, likewise, with the school protest that happened in 2019, the conversation that I've always wanted about homosexuality in Islam, it came forward, you know, and it was very much a heated debate for about a year. But at least people had that conversation. And I'm hoping that with these Commonwealth Games and with the representation that we have, that, you know, we do have the conversations, whether it's uncomfortable or not. You know, and I know from personal experience that, like Stacey, I kind of stepped away for a little while from those conversations because you have to be mindful of your own health and well-being, because I experienced burnout. But I'm I'm looking forward to that, you know, the conversations continue happening on a regular basis, and it doesn't just happen for this time period in life, that we continue having it, and Birmingham builds upon that, you know, and with, you know, especially with the media representation, with billboards, anything really that can enable that conversation to continue is worthwhile. Because I keep thinking about the next generation as to what they're going to go through. You know, are people going to come through and still be closeted? Or are we going to have a higher percentage of people saying, you know what, I'm part of the LGBT community, I'm married, I've got children, it doesn't matter, because that to me is the pinnacle of equality. Not necessarily to get married, because that's everyone's choice, but it's just the fact that we're on a level playing field.
When you think about the reach of the games, and we know over like a billion people are expected to watch some of the games around the world, and the large proportion of the population of the Commonwealth is from India, Pakistan, you know, that area of the world. Do you think there's an opportunity here for Pakistan perhaps to take a movement forwards in the same way that India did a few years ago, and that somehow the Commonwealth Games could play a part in doing that by sharing a message of inclusion?
I really, really wish it can, you know, but I know, as I said, from my personal experiences, I'm talking to a lot of people, that, you know, there might be people who are out, individuals quite confident in their own race, but at the same time, you've got the practical aspects of it, but you've also got the religious aspects. And I think if we can break down the religious aspects and turn it on its head and say, you know, the Quran, for example, or Islam is very much more inclusive, that will change a lot of things. And also with regards to athletes as well, if we have individuals coming through who are young, confident within their own skin to say they're part of the LGBT community, I'm hoping that that can be a step forward. And yeah, like Pakistan, I think if we can turn on that switch overnight to make that change, I would gladly hit it. But I know it's going to be a long time coming, you know, and sometimes it's really controversial, very much a taboo subject matter. And people do shut their eyes and ears to what's going on in the world, and especially when it comes to family and siblings and children and parents' expectations of that child as well. That makes a huge difference. But I'm hoping, like I keep saying, I'm hoping that there are going to be some athletes out there who are from the South Asian communities and do quite proudly say that they're LGBTQ. We just need to get that conversation going more than anything.
Stacey, how do you feel netball as a sport has stepped up on this kind of messaging? Because I know you've been involved in campaigns like Rainbow Laces, and the sport has as well. Loughborough Lightning over here had a pride match recently. It was the first time they'd done that, which I'm sure meant a lot to Sarah, your wife, watching from afar. So tell me how you think like netball as a sport has begun to navigate this, because I know you've got some very high profile leading nations like Jamaica, for example, you know, which people there don't enjoy the same rights in terms of LGBTQ inclusion that we do here.
Yeah, I think netball's a really interesting space, because although it is obviously predominantly played by women, the men's game is growing, and it is really a sport for everybody, regardless of, you know, gender now, especially sexuality, like size, anything. Like, I feel like netball has always been a really inclusive and diverse space in that respect. But similar to what we were speaking about earlier, I feel like that has almost been taken for granted, which I think has meant that the sport as a whole has sat back on being more vocal and diving into really key issues like race and sexuality. And it's not to say that I think netball has like closed its eyes and ears, to borrow a really nice phrase from Kakan earlier, but I think because it is, you know, perceived and experienced as being this really safe, diverse space, not so much has been done. But I think there is a real appetite and just willingness to just really lean in, to learn more, to ask and canvas the athletes, the participants, the volunteers, like all members and people who experience the game, how they feel, if they are actually supported, represented, engaged, and have a safe space to participate. And as a result of that, there's quite a lot of work, you know, being done, which I think is fantastic. The Pride van for Loughborough Lightning in the Super Netball at home, absolutely incredible. And Loughborough University as a space in general is fantastic for that. Equally, same sport, different leagues. There isn't a Pride round in Suncorp Super Netball there for the first time this year is a Pride game. And so just one team gets to kind of advocate and experience that. So I was disappointed by that. My team isn't participating in that, but it's change. And hopefully it will be something that isn't perceived to be, you know, just tokenistic, because it makes a sport or a space seem inclusive. It's, you know, meaningful to both the participants and the people who consume the sport.
And you, on a personal level, have brought visibility to this in the past, where you've had rainbow laces or rainbow braids in your hair. Tell me about the reactions that you had to doing that. Was that encouraging?
Yeah, it was something that I kind of decided on my own. There's a lot of difficulties with getting, you know, your whole team or, yeah, like the whole organisation involved in things that you do. But what I felt really supported by was everybody's response and reaction. So yeah, for one of the games, I wear braids when I play anyway, which are typically green for the team colour that I play in. But yeah, for this game, I had them rainbow. And then the lady that braids my hair is incredible, and she braided my hair into a DNA strand, just to really hit home the fact that, you know, being bisexual is a part of who I am. It's not an add-on, it's just me. And yeah, I felt incredibly like confident and comfortable to do that. I felt really well supported by the group and the people around me. But I would love, I think, for whole groups and organisations to get on board and behind and have much more impact, rather than, I think, individual athletes or advocates having to stick their neck out all the time, because I think it makes the voice and the message much more powerful. People, I think, and hope, know who I am and know what I stand for. And I will continue to shout about that in the most positive and enthusiastic of ways. But the louder we can shout and the more voices we can have shouting it, then the better.
I think it's a really interesting sort of area of conversation, this visibility in sport, and how do athletes kind of bring that. And it's been a big talking point around Birmingham 2022 as well, because the Commonwealth Games Federation has kind of made this announcement that protests and pride flags, for example, would be... Not necessarily encouraged, but not kind of, you would not be penalized for doing that if you're an athlete and you wanted to bring that as part of your visibility at the games. What's your thoughts on that, Kakan? Is that something that, if you could, you imagine seeing that as a young person, and would that have had a big impact on you to see an athlete standing on a podium with a pride flag, for example?
Yeah, I just want to say a couple of things. First of all, is that with regards to what Stacey has just said about asking the people involved, whether it's athletes and across the board, I think that's really, really important that that does happen, so that when, if we do have the opportunity again, or any time for that matter, not just necessarily with the Commonwealth Games, that people who matter are asked that question. And I think that's really important. And also about having allies as well across the board. That helps as well move the conversation forward, and, you know, having that visibility and knowing that there's support systems in place, that really helps as well. So I think when you pull that two together, and then having an individual on the podium with the LGBT rainbow flag, you know, that really will drive it home as well, to say, just like Stacey said, she had that plaque with the DNA strand, and that will identify that, you know, this is inherent to who we are, and it's just one aspect of our being. And also, you know, it's an achievement in itself. One is, if you're at the podium and you're number one, two or three, gold, silver, bronze, that's an achievement in itself. But to stand there proudly, especially if you're coming from the South Asian or the minority ethnic backgrounds, that's a bigger achievement in itself, because we don't get those opportunities very often. So I hope that they will be applauded for it, because it takes somebody quite brave and courageous to do that as well, you know, because some people might be mindful of the repercussions, especially if they go back home. But I'm hoping that with having allies and support systems in place, not necessarily here in the UK in Birmingham, but when they return home as well, that, you know, they continue having that support and they can be who they want to be without any kind of guilt or shame. And I think that's really important. And I think it would be an amazing achievement if the young generation see that and say, you know what, it's okay. It's okay to be who you want to be, and they shouldn't be ostracized for it.
We're certainly seeing athletes kind of speaking out much more. It's not just the visibility, it's also what they say, which is kind of having a big impact. And I suppose most famously, Tom Daley speaking at the Gold Coast Commonwealth Games about, you know, the disparity in terms of LGBTQ plus rights in the Commonwealth was a big example of that. Recently, we've had Colin Jackson saying something similar, you know, two-time Commonwealth Games gold medalist for Wales in hurdles, speaking about how the UK should be playing a stronger role in pushing for LGBTQ plus equality across the Commonwealth, and noting actually how those laws that do exist are a negative legacy of empire. And that was something that he said very specifically. So how important is it, and maybe Stacey, come to you first just to get an athlete's view, how important is it that the UK kind of takes responsibility here? And is sport, because of the values that are intrinsic to sport, maybe that's the best vehicle to have this conversation with?
I think it's really challenging. And I think, I don't know whether it's because of, you know, my experiences and the environments that I've come through, but something that really grinds my gears and that I hear all the time, since especially being in Australia, but certainly sometimes in and around sport in general, is that sport and politics don't mix. And it drives me mad. I think it's absolutely rubbish, which is not a really articulate way to say it, but I do think it's absolute rubbish. Like I obviously said earlier, I am not just an athlete. You don't get to just consume who I am by the way in which I throw and catch the ball on court. That isn't the legacy I want to leave. That isn't the messaging that I want people to take away. I think when we consume sport, like whatever you watch, whoever it is, you should also be able to pause and think about them as a holistic human being, and not be, I guess, just not want to be oblivious to who they are and what they stand for. And so, like, I firmly believe that sport is a fantastic space to be able to really push and drive home really important messages. And I think if you're coming from, you know, a place and a position of power, like, you know, England and the UK certainly is, then it would really be a shame, and I think a waste of that, to not influence other countries and support other countries to update the way in which they approach certain things.
And Kakan, you were nodding along with that, so I presume that you're in agreement with Stacey.
Of course, because I also think that when we look at sports and politics as well, you know, we can never divide them like people assume that we can. And with regards to the colonial laws as well, you know, those laws were made 200-300 years ago, and really, really, truly, the government lawmakers of today, they can remove that legacy if they wanted to. And what we need to look at is the whys and the wherefores as to why are they holding on to that legacy in particular. What is it that they're fearful of, and why do they carry these prejudices towards the LGBT community? And like Stacey quite rightly says, that the UK is such in a position of power and influence that from the Commonwealth Games they need to have that conversation again to say, you know, we've supported you through a lot of things and vice versa. So now is the time to make a change. So I think it's time that we look at the Commonwealth, what it does have to offer, and say, if we want equality, if we want to continue the way we are, to show that we are a wider community than what how we're presenting, we do need to work together to show equality and not have that divisions anymore. I know there's been some controversy in the last, well, number of years anyway, with regards to Commonwealth and how it's being presented. But we really need to move with the times and get with it in the 21st century, because the world is much more diverse than ever before. And, you know, in some quarters, this might create more division, but I'm hoping that it will unify more now more than ever. So I think we do need to look at, you know, representation of LGBT community, how it links in with colonialism, and how we can move forward on this as well. And if it means, like Tom Daley had advocated at some point, that we block LGBT, anti-LGBT countries, maybe that's a case forward. But on the other side is, I'm looking more at unifying people. You know, I want to look at people's similarities rather than the differences. And it goes back to what you were saying, that, you know, it's about pride, celebration, and educating. And this is going to be one step in the right direction, all being well. Like Stacey said, let's just hope it's not just in one small time frame, that it's here forever and we do leave a legacy that people can benefit from. And I think it hopefully can be something that Birmingham will be really proud to be part of as well, because we don't get this opportunity, as far as I'm aware, not in my history, that we've had an opportunity like this before.
Just to kind of bring it back to Birmingham and the West Midlands as we kind of come towards the end of our chat. And Kakon, maybe you can tell us a bit more about the role that you played, particularly when it came to conversations about education with schools in the city. Anderson Park in particular, you were famous for kind of being involved in the No Outsiders campaign and the conversations that you had. Can you give our listeners a little bit more background about the role you played there?
Well, it was because I have Finding a Voice as a social support group for South Asian LGBT, and I have a social media presence as well. So when I initially seen these complaint come forward, I thought it's going to be resolved internally within the school for about a week. And as an activist as well, I just thought I need to do something more about this. And I knew the only way I could reach out was through my social media account, which is what I did do, to say that, you know, I really need to, I believe for myself, I need to access the school and talk to the young pupils and the teachers and parents to say that, you know, LGBTQ Muslims and South Asian individuals do exist. We're here, we're not necessarily out, but we are here and we do exist. So, yeah, it's quite an interesting turn of events because a lot of people I thought would have been my generation and maybe older. Maybe I'm being a little bit prejudiced there, but as it stands, it was younger people. And unfortunately, the younger people who were protesting tended to be born and bred here. So they had a good British education, but they still carried this somewhat archaic mindset and prejudice against LGBT individuals. And the community at large. And so for me, it was trying to straddle that bridge because the media portrayed it as brown Muslims versus white LGBT. And that's not necessarily how it should have been, to be honest. So I was hoping to kind of integrate the two sides of my identity as well in particular, because I straddled both LGBT and South Asian. I really wanted these conversations to kind of steer in the right direction. And I was hoping to educate the people to say that, you know, the Quran doesn't state anything against homosexuals. It was people in the last 400 or 500 years who had misinterpreted what the Quran says, because otherwise, if we say as Muslims that you cannot be gay and Muslim, you're placing Islam on a different pedestal and you're giving it a kind of and quite an elite status, whereas Islam isn't about that at all. It's more about equality across the board. No matter how you identify, no matter what your social status is, you know. So that's where it is. It's about being human more than anything. And I've said it before and I'm going to say it again. It's just one aspect of my identity that I do enjoy and I'm comfortable in. I've been out for 30 years with my partner for 30 years. And I want people to see that LGBTQ individuals, we're not freaks, pardon my expression, but we're just ordinary people wanting to lead ordinary lives and not want anybody to interfere in how we navigate it.
Stacey, when you've been into schools as an athlete, I'm sure it happens now and again. Do you feel like there's a space there where you can make a reference to your wife and help kind of children's understanding? Obviously, we're talking about, you know, different age groups and etc. But is that something that you kind of feel is important to do when you get that chance to interact with young people?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that I ever go into any environment like within the community specifically to advocate for netball where I censor parts of myself. Like, I think I am very mindful of, you know, pushing the things that are important for me and what I stand for, which is actually being a British person, like being from Birmingham. Nobody knows where Birmingham is here until the Commonwealth Games got put there. But yeah, so I can't push being a Brummie as much, but I'm definitely, you know, proud to be English. I'm an import playing in the Australian League. I'm a mixed race person, like woman. I have a black dad and a white mother. I am bisexual. I'm married to my wife, Sarah. I love to talk about my two weddings that we had. I think there's a lot that I try to draw from in terms of letting people get to know me and who I am. In the wider context of not just being a, you know, a West Coast Fever player or an England netballer, this is me and who I am. And all of these things have kind of led me to be in this fantastic position and to be playing netball.
I love how you kind of encapsulate the authenticity within that, because it's, I think it is the most important thing that you can bring it, particularly as a Pride House ambassador, is that message of authenticity. And I suppose when we're looking at Birmingham in particular, we should also be mindful of the fact that sadly, there have been some incidents recently. It kind of reminds us that Birmingham is not necessarily, far from it, a utopia for LGBTQ plus people. There have been reports that hate crime incidents have risen by around 30% in the last year. That was some statistics that came out. These are people reporting hate crimes that are related to being LGBT. So perhaps we should be encouraged that people feel more confident to report these things when in the past they didn't. And Gakon, what's your reaction to that? Because we want Pride House to be a celebration, but we also need to kind of recognise that there's a bigger picture going on here as well.
Yeah, because it is unfortunate that there is a rise in homophobia, biphobia and transphobia across the city. But, you know, I'm not going to say that it's only to Birmingham. It does happen in other parts of the UK, if not the world. But I think in terms of where these attacks are happening or have happened in area or the community of the gay village in Birmingham, which is in the heart of the city centre, where we would have thought we were most assured and safe and secure. I am so glad that Lawrence Barton has now finally decided to install security cameras. That helps as well. But I think, you know, when you think about how things have developed, you know, we've been kind of oppressed or pressurized over the years anyway with Section 28, you know, how people were treated over the last 30 years. And just when you think you're making strides forward with, you know, the Equality Act 2010, same-sex legislation, you know, Stacey's married, you know, she's had two weddings, and you think this is a great achievement. But then at the same time, you're getting people coming in and stepping in and wanting to squash what our aspirations or wanting to oppress us even more. So there's pushback to what's coming out, no doubts about it. There is a pushback from a lot of quarters. And it's quite sad, really, that, you know, I took part in the protest a couple of times last year when one or two people who were victims stepped forward, you know, and we were thinking the police needs to do more, the council needs to do a lot more, and other professional organisations do need to do a lot more to support us. The only way forward in doing that is either through education, maybe through more protesting, but also sort of looking at how we enforce the kind of the benefits of same-sex legislation, if that makes sense. And also the individuals who are the perpetrators of these crimes, I think they need to be educated as well, you know, through conversations, you know, through mediation even, rather than just lock them up and say, you've done your crime and that's it. I think there needs to be some sort of focus and understanding from both parties. And as I said, me being South Asian and Muslim, I think that as well, we need to have a conversation about what religion actually says, what cultures are saying, and being able to differentiate between the certain threads of our identity as well. So I'm hoping, you know, that these crimes do decrease. But as we know, there's always going to be bad people out there. But I'm hoping that with Pride House in particular, being the heart of the gay village, will change that. You know, we need to change that narrative. And we need to have those role models, you know, plaster all over the billboard if we have to.
Yeah, and of course, you know, we want Pride House to kind of play a part in that, and the programme is getting very busy already. Kind of we're putting together plans for exhibitions and performances and this mix of different cultural events and volunteers. There's a big hunt going on for volunteers as well. So do both of you, I'll come to Stacey first. Do you have an idea for something that you would quite like to see in that Pride House space? Or maybe it's just a vision of how being in there might make you feel? Like, what's your kind of vision for Pride House?
I think that's a really interesting question. I think somebody asked me in a previous interview around kind of what kind of responsibility does the Commonwealth Games and specifically Pride House have, you know, in creating a safe space for athletes who potentially are like identify as being LGBT, but are from a place where it's really not supported or it's illegal. And I hadn't really thought about that before because I, you know, have a privilege of living my life with full authenticity and actually for other athletes from other countries to be able to come and experience Pride House and to have, I guess, that same level of comfort and positivity around who they are and be able to bring that to Pride House or at least to the, you know, to the Commonwealth Games. I think it will be really powerful. It's obviously really disappointing that they potentially can't be that whole person and to take that home. But I hadn't really thought about what a safe educational like space that it can provide for, you know, athletes, fans within the Commonwealth who don't necessarily have and live that at home, and how it may even give them, you know, more resolve, more resources, more education and ambition to take back home into their own communities, into their own government spaces to create some change.
I think so much of it as well is just having that awareness for athletes that Pride House exists. So this could be the first kind of Commonwealth Games where Pride House is kind of signposted or referenced in kind of official games literature, which I think is quite important. Kakan, do you have an idea for something that you would like to see in Pride House that you think would be particularly of importance to your communities in the area?
Yeah, I think on the one side it would be quite nice. I'd know, maybe towards the beginning or at the end of the whole programming of events, is that we have some kind of our own mini Pride parade type of thing, so we can take it onto the streets. But also, you know, more importantly from my perspective, is it would be nice to see either people across the board who are people of colour, or there's, you know, posters, people of colour again, and also having information, maybe a timeline of LGBT individuals who are quite famous or not so famous, more like the unsung heroes of the sport, that we kind of, maybe they were there fleetingly and then they disappeared for whatever reason. But I think it'll be quite nice if we have, you know, we do demonstrate the diversity of the community and the multicultural aspects of Birmingham, because we keep saying that we pride ourselves in it, but I need to see that sort of implemented and embedded within Pride House itself. So that we don't just end up with the same narrative that we see time and time again, especially within LGBT stories. You know, it would be nice to see people of colour, people who are either South Asian or different faiths coming together.
No, that's fine. We'll pause just a minute there. But just as a last question, perhaps we can just kind of touch upon like your proudest moments as individuals, a sporting achievement or a campaigning achievement or something else. Stacey, perhaps we'll come to you first, as Kakan just tries to mute his phone, which is this is what happens in podcast world. So what was your kind of proudest moment that you think you would like to reference?
Potentially a little bit cliche, but I like to think that I haven't had my proudest or greatest moment yet. I think off of the back of an athlete advocacy Zoom that I was on for Commonwealth Games England, and also reading the statement around Commonwealth Games in terms of, I guess, advocating for who you are in a bit more of a loud and public fashion, I feel like I already have this really clear vision of myself being the most authentic version that I can be on top of the podium with a gold medal around my neck. And an incredibly large, you know, Pride House pin and all of the other things that I can sneak in and get away with, just so everybody knows exactly who I am when I step on that podium as being a Brummie who has an incredibly proud wife at home, who is mixed race, and all of those things contributed to what will be the pinnacle of my career if I can take home a gold medal from Birmingham 2022.
I love that. Proudest moment yet to come. And Kakan, do you have one?
Well, to be honest, I don't know how to top that one, but that was so beautiful. And that's really made me quite emotional. I don't know why, but it has. But again, that's about Stacey being authentic and telling it as it is. And that's absolutely wonderful. I think I have, on a personal level, the proudest achievement for me is maintaining my long-term relationship. We've been together for 30 years. We're complete opposites, like chalk and cheese. But, you know, we celebrated 30 years back in April. I don't know how, but we did. Another proud achievement is coordinating the South Asian LGBT conference in Birmingham. It's the first of its kind and it's a sellout. And I just knew then that anything is possible. If I can do it, then anybody can.
Well, I think that's the perfect note on which to end, and we can send our listeners away knowing that anything is possible. And, you know, Pride House is certainly going to carry that message as well. So it just leaves me to thank you both so much for giving your time to join us on the Pride House podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that was Stacey Francis-Bayman and Kakan Qureshi in conversation on episode 3 of the Pride House podcast. I found that really illuminating and a real insight into how the values of an athlete who's LGBTQ+ align with those of a campaigner. Everybody connected to Pride House Birmingham will contribute to the celebrate, participate, educate message, from our volunteers to our athlete ambassadors, from our advisory board members to the many visitors who will come through the doors. It's going to be a welcoming place for all of us. Well, that concludes this episode of the podcast. In case you missed them, you can learn all about the history of Pride Houses at the Commonwealth Games in our first two episodes, which focus on Glasgow 2014 and Gold Coast 2018. They're both full of fascinating anecdotes and they'll whet your appetite for Pride House Birmingham. We'd love to hear from you, so do get in touch via social media or our website. Look for the links in the show notes. And while you're there, hit subscribe, post a rating and a review, and find that share button, because your support and word of mouth will help us to grow our audience.
There's an ongoing recruitment drive for volunteers to help at the venue in July and August, with open days to be held in Birmingham on Sunday, May the 29th, and Sunday, June the 5th. You can register online at pridehousebham.org.uk/volunteer, where there's more information available. And you can also follow Pride House on Twitter, which is pridehousebham.
The Netball Show with Flyhawk, raising the bar for netball and women's sport.